On. I would like now to invite my next two guests, so Oscar Nieto to join me in the floor, and Eric Winnipenix as well. So Oscar will guide us through the documents that have been developed during this Action 5. So Oscar Nieto is Technical Director in Construction Products Europe. Most of those linked to Construction Products Association manufacturers know them better than perhaps I know, even if we have been working together for quite some years. So Oscar will start giving a little bit of information about the outcomes of GIS Action 5. Eric will follow as well, and I think Eric will focus rather on, I think one of the achievements in GIS Action 5 is that very early in the process we identify that different stakeholders want different standards. And this was very clear. And I think during GIS Action 5, one of the aspects that we said we should highlight for the future of the CPR, for the future of the harmonized standards in support of the CPR, is that it's clearly important to highlight what are all the benefits that standards bring to the European standardization system and to the manufacturer, constructors, and all the stakeholders. So those will be the two sets of the presentations that our guests will do. And now I will give the floor to Oscar. Okay. So green to move on.
Okay, so I will try to explain what we have done in the GIS Action 5, but before starting this, you know I represent Construction Products Europe, it's the European Association of Construction Products Manufacturers, and 3 years ago, Christoph Sykes had an invitation to go to Amsterdam to sign a GIS Action 5 initiative, a long document about a lot of ideas that were going to be discussed in standardization related to regulations. Christoph came to me and said, what the hell is this? What are we going to do here? I read a lot of content, but I don't see any practical action there. So we had the same discussion in our CPR working group. We have our convener here, and most of the experts of this group are also around the table. And they said, this GIS Action 5 cannot have any real impact in the market if we don't go to the details. We can discuss forever about having best practices or improve standardization, but what I need is the citation of a standard. So this action will make sense only if it really promotes the citation of a standard. And during the last 3 years, we have been discussing in our groups, in the groups of GIS Action 5, in the BT Working Group 9, not only in GIS Action 5, a lot of initiatives to try to solve this problem that we all know is happening now. I'm not going to try to go to the reasons why the standards are not cited. I think this will be something that also the Commission will present later, and also Nuno will also explain what are the specific solutions. But what I'm trying to do today is just to report what we have been doing in practical documents, not really having open discussions about what are the problems are and how to deal with it. So Padma already gave the link and everything, so I think we can go fast. Our main goal is this. We cannot forget this. We can work a lot, but if we don't support really the citation of the harmonized standards, this action doesn't really make sense. So that was the goal. We were having this in mind. So the idea is that the standardization process is not easy. So when I started in standardization, I started with the CPD, and it was always the same. Somebody came with the idea of having a standard because there was a CPD. We could do more or less whatever we wanted. And in the end, there were some discussions about the money. This is no longer the situation. Now all the processes start with the first documents, the mandate and the standardization requests. The arm in the bottom is not really in place yet, but I hope it will be in place soon. So now this is a change of mind. Anybody working on a standardization first need to address the mandate. And we will see that the problem is just this, because the mandate is not really an easy or a good document to start with. And having a good mandate and understanding the mandate is not enough. So you will see that you will need to deal with a lot of documents in the middle. The answer to the mandate, then you need to draft the standard together with the answer to the mandate. You need to justify what you are doing and trying to reflect all your decisions in a document that sometimes is not really addressed. And even if you have a harmonized standard, there are a lot of constraints in the CPR that will block your work. First, the HAS consultants will do the assessment according to the criteria of the commission, and then you maybe block again. You have this first barrier that you have to pass. Then you have the classification and the thresholds, which can also block your standard. So your standard can be perfect, but then you need to wait for the commission to have a delegated act to really allow you to have the classification. The same with the thresholds. And in the end, there are also some additional documents that are not really related to standardization, but are quite relevant. You know, the ABCP system is crucial in your standards, and also the declaration without testing. What we did during the development of the initiative was to try to go step by step and trying to find some guidance on how to deal with all these documents. The first discussions were, I think, in a totally different legal situation at that time. So it was 2016, we were young, we were eager to find solutions. And we had two routes to deal with the mandates. One was if the mandate is not properly written or there is an issue with the mandate, we had at that time the option to amend the mandate, have a revision of the mandate, or we had the option to go for the standardization request. The amendment of the mandate was the easy approach. It had a very low legal requirements. It was done before with the CPD. Looked like the best option. And the cement industry decided to go for it. And under a very, very tight pressure from the commission, they deliver in 15 days, but the deliverable took another year. So it was not so fast, and it created a lot of discussions in the European Commission, especially also in the standardization unit. So from these two options, the first was the easy and the fast. The second was kind of unknown, because we have never done it before with this procedure. But in 2018, standardization unit decided not the first option. Probably is fast and easy, but from the legal point of view, it's not solid enough. So a lot of work was done on this in DG Section 5, and this approach was removed, and there is no document about that because it's no longer possible. So now, if you have a problem with your mandate, good luck first. And the second is that the only legal route to change it is through a standardization request. We will discuss this afternoon also what implications does it have. So you cannot have an amendment of the mandate. The other option is to deal with your existing mandate. This is what we have been doing. I think most of you have been doing this. And we deliver a document for that. So answer to the mandate and work program. Work program is something similar, well, not similar, but the same kind of document for in case you have a standardization request. The answer to the mandate is supposed to explain to the European Commission why the decisions taken when drafting the standard make sense and the standard really fit the mandate. So it's a kind of explanatory document. In the past, it was a kind of long document with a lot of content, not very clear. And I think this was really being more a pain than really a useful tool for the commission. So the action decided, or we decided as part of the action, to draft something that was easy to read, the table, with a clear link between the essential characteristic in the mandate, the essential characteristic in the standard, some justifications. And I think in the last years, you have been using more or less this template, and it was a useful tool. Again, pending question, what is the value from the legal point of view, what the commission is doing with this document? It depends. Sometimes they take it quite well, and they accept it, and sometimes they have some questions. But in any case, this is the only tool we have if we are in the top approach, so in the mandate. Okay, so, well, I think this is what we tried. Then we go to the standard, and when we started the initiative, we were identifying a lot of problems, which were always the same, and a justification for the blockage of the standards. And one that was coming quite often was the dangerous substances clause. You have the dangerous substances clause, and this started to be a kind of discussion how to deal with it. Before we had a standardized test, you just copy-paste this test, and that's it. This was no longer possible. This test was supposing the blockage of your standard, so therefore it was not the right approach. And during the process, Germany decided to have a court case against the European Commission, specifically on these two standards, and then everything was even more complex. Because when we were asking what to do with dangerous substances, the reply from the Commission is, oh, there is a court case, we need to wait. There was pressure from some member states. Of course, people from the industry working in TCs, they were pushing to have a solution because they need to reply to the mandate with something in this clause. And the result of the court case was very recent. Finally, the European Commission won the case. And more or less, there is a lot of information about this, but the court case was about this removal of the clause of dangerous substances, and the Court of Justice decided that this was the right approach. So in our G-Section 5, this is exactly what we reflect, the reality. If you have a problem with dangerous substances, you can remove the clause, because in this court case, it was clear that the Court of Justice considered that this is a way forward. But you can also implement the dangerous substances clause, but not with this general statement about national provisions. This is not possible. You need to implement it properly according to the standards developed by SNTC 351. Elena referred to this TC, which has been working for a long time. This is the content of this document is exactly this, explaining that you cannot just do this, put a general clause. You need to be specific and fill all the content. And also, it provides guidance on how to do it, because sometimes you cannot do it. If your mandate doesn't contain the list of essential characteristics or the substances in this case, you probably won't be able to do it. And in the very last stage, we also added a clause about REACH, because there were some discussions about that. We discussed with Manfred Fuchs and with other people. In principle, we have more or less kind of guidance on this, because I think this is also quite important for some of you. So the value of this document is a guidance document. It cannot be taken as a really, if you follow it, everything will be okay, but I think it reflects what is the current situation. We also work a bit on the FAR clauses. You sometimes, quite often, have FAR clauses. There was a document before, but the situation has changed. We had a delegated R for the reaction to FAR. We have some issues that we need to define. And now you have a document for FAR. Also quite relevant, a lot of standards were blocked because the clause for AVCP was not okay. You see that this is quite of the most important parts of the standard. And this part is really, really relevant because it's a mix between the usual standardization work and a regulatory approach. AVCP only exists according to the CPR. It doesn't exist even with other regulations or the directives. So there is a need for the industry to really define what is the AVCP and how to implement the AVCP in practice. The template we had was out of date. We were discussing with the Commission the revision of the template, or the draft is not really a template, it's a guidance. And Nuno can tell you that he was chasing the people from the Commission for months and months to really have a meeting, discuss. And I put the logo of the Commission because I hope they have endorsed this, and this will be the final document. So the content is very important, because really the AVCP and the way you do this is one of the main problems we have. And I would like to clarify that this is just how to deal with the AVCP, not to define what is the AVCP system you need to apply, because this is written in the Commission decisions that were already published, or in potential or existing delegated acts. So this clause tells you how to draft the clause, but you cannot really choose what is your AVCP. You need to trust the other documents. And if you don't agree or you want to change something about the ABCP, something essential characteristic you don't agree that it should be 3, it should be 4, you cannot do that in the document. You need to go for the complex procedure of the delegated act. This is another important document. This was the original draft came from the Commission, which was quite interesting, and we considered it was very, very good. It's a kind of Commission called it do's and don'ts, so what to do and what not to do. There are some issues there which were properly reflected about the scope, the normative references, definitions, and the way it is expressed is through good practices and content to be avoided. So in principle, it's okay. You see that in this document, it's different from the others because it contains comments. Why? Because I don't know how many times we discussed this. I think 20 or whatever. So we had different rounds of comments. The document was not fully agreed. But in general, I think the content is okay. And the comments also provide some ideas or some guidance. Some of the issues that were quite important is the idea of I need one assessment method for every essential characteristic. This was a huge discussion because what is an assessment method? Why only one? But wait, we have a standards where we have one, the more than one. So this is one of the of the topics. And also something that was a bit difficult is the problem with the voluntary characteristics, because this was a changing approach. In the past, we had the possibility to have additional essential characteristics which were not in the in the Annex A. They were not in the DOP, and they were just in the standard. At one point, the HAS consultants, with using guidance from the European Commission, decided that it was no longer possible. There was a document from the Commission, again, this is not possible, what you have to do, what you have to avoid. And again, it's not very clear how to deal with this, but this document is also having some remarks on this. This is another document, quite recent. It's a living document, so this document is just a first draft. I think in a working group, BT working group 9, dealing with the CPR, we will probably have a revision of this document. It's what common inappropriate wording and errors. So this was quite common. At one point, we discussed with the Commission why you block this standard. Oh, the wording is very bad. I say, what is the problem? The problem is you say, manufacturers shall assess this performance and declare it. And they say, no, this is in contradiction with the CPR because you have the MPD option. You may not assess and declare. And I think for everybody it was obvious that the MPD option was one thing and the text in the standard was just, of course, in case you want to do it. But for the Commission, this was a fundamental issue. This document tried to collect all the situations where you have a wording that could be considered in contradiction with the CPR, and therefore you should avoid it. So I think if you are in a TC, you should take a look to it and try to avoid it. This is not a document from the G Section 5, but I wanted to put it here because it's very important. This is the template for the Annex A. You need to, this is template, so copy paste, don't change anything. The only thing I wanted to remark is that there was a clause in this referring to the SMEs. Micro enterprises are allowed to treat products under ABCP system 3 as 4. Under certain conditions, according to Article 36. We had some discussions because the Commission didn't like that this clause was included if in your standard you don't have any essential characteristic for ABCP system 3. So be careful. This is a template, but you may need to remove this paragraph. This is something that we discuss. It's not written, but we may need to also think about it. The HAS checklist, of course, is not a deliverable of the GIS, but we provided comments. Hopefully, the Commission will consider our comments. For the moment, I haven't seen the new version. This is a kind of guidance on what are they going to check when they will assess your standards. We have some controversial points here. For example, if it is okay for SMEs, this is a kind of difficult to assess, but in any case, the document is there, and you will all also find some issues that are quite important. For example, the dated references, old story, and now very strict. So it's good to have a look to the document when you are in the last stage and to see that, okay, this is what they are going to look in my standard. I need to be sure that it's okay. Clauses and thresholds, as I said before, if you want to have a threshold, it's not easy. In practice, a threshold is something quite important according to the CPR, because you could remove products from the market, and this is considered quite a kind of very wrong action according to the CPR, and you will require a delegated act. This document we developed is just a template where you can fill it and explain what threshold and class you need. This is supposed to be sent to the European Commission, and they will take it, and you will see that with time they start working on this, and they have these documents ongoing, sometimes faster or slower, but that's it. And we need to follow this through the Standing Committee on Construction, and also there is a public consultation. The process is here, and is explained here, what to do, how the Commission is going to do it, how is the process, WTO consultation, the scrutiny in the Parliament and the Council. And I think in case you need this, it's good to take a look and see, okay, and also you will know more or less what are the potential issues that you can identify here. The document includes also this declaration without testing, because you may need also, if you want to declare, for example, one essential characteristic, the usual case is fire performance, so my product doesn't burn, I don't have any problem with fire, so I want to declare reaction to fire class A1, because it's a product that doesn't have any problem. I cannot do it on my own. You need the legal document if you don't want to test it, and this is now a delegated act, and this document explains how to do it. Now we have some discussions about this. One remark about the thresholds. This is one of the delegated acts that the Commission presented to the Standing Committee on Construction and will adopt soon. And this is a crucial point. In this case, if you have a threshold and the delegated act is like this, you cannot use MPD for this essential characteristic. So you are obliged to declare. Usually you can have MPD for any essential characteristic. You need to check the national requirements, but in general, if a delegated act for a threshold is published, you are obliged to declare always this characteristic in any market. It's always like this, of course, if it is in the text of the delegated act, yes. If not, there are some discussions about it. But it's an implication that you need to consider. So if you want to introduce a threshold in your standard, you probably will oblige the full industry in Europe to declare it. And also you need to justify why you are excluding products from the market, because everybody will declare, and of course below the threshold the product cannot be sold in Europe. The other is the classes and thresholds. A lot of questions from TCs. Why do we need the delegated act for classes and thresholds? I need to change my classification, and I don't want to go through a legal procedure to do it. The problem, it's not really a problem, is Article 8 of the CPR. Once you have a classification in a standard, member states need to update the regulation to this classification. And when the legal text of the CPR was written, they say, oh, this is a problem, because these guys in the standardization can change the classification, and they will force me to change my classification in my regulation. And I want to have at least be part of the decision making. Okay, you are in the delegated act procedure, so you have the Council and the Parliament to work on this. Again, this is explained in this document, but I think it's very relevant. Also because sometimes when you are in a TC trying to draft a standard and you see all the obstacles, you say, well, but why am I suffering so much for nothing? quite important declaration without testing. This is, I think, the last. It's for motors. It's for the declaration without testing. So in some cases, really, it's obvious that the performance is like this, so you don't need to test. Reduce the burden of the manufacturers is allowed. Again, not easy. You need to draft a dossier. You need to work hard on this, but this is there. In the last years, not a lot of delegated acts were published on this, and probably one of the reasons was because of the lack of guidance on how to do it. This document provides guidance, and also we will try to work a bit more on this, for probably with a template in the future. This is something we need to discuss. And that's it. You are supposed to go through all the documents when you draft a TC, and hopefully, instead of discussing with the HAS consultants, with Gonzalo and Nuno, and then with the European Commission, you may have more ideas, or you can also have more arguments to know why they are so picky with your document, and also you can prevent the problems. And I hope in the end these documents will really be the deliverable to transform this standard GIS Action 5 into something that is useful for the industry.
Thanks, okay.
Well, I think, and especially in the last slide, we went through some of the points that make harmonizing standards under the CPR so complicated. I think also historically, standardization and regulations have been very close, and very often we mix the two. And I think this has always been one of the points that we have tried to highlight also in GIS Action 5, is to make the clear separation from what is a standardization matter and what is a regulatory matter, like the cases you presented at the end. Very often they mix with the standardization discussions, but they are purely a regulatory aspect, which is closely linked to the standards, but it's important to make the separation. I think now it's the perfect moment to introduce Eric, and of course some of you may have questions, but I will save it for after Eric's presentation. During GIS Action 5, it was really evident that in some cases we have standards that are going a little bit further than just the approach of assessing essential characteristics. They go into installation aspects, to how to ensure a certain quality also of the product. And I think it is evident that the standards that we have today go further in the content than what the Commission expects from harmonized standard. It came from different stakeholders that it's extremely important to keep the technical knowledge. So, and this is an important set of the overall discussion to keep in mind for the future. And that's why I'm inviting Eric Winnipenik. So Eric works in the Belgian Building Research Institute. He's been involved in so many different sectors of the standardization system, like his share of CEN-TC 128. He's also been involved in the group of notified bodies, so he has really a full picture of the construction sector, so he's the perfect person to make this explanation now, Eric. Okay. So just move on with the green, okay, and everything should be fine.
Thank you, Gonzalo. Good morning, colleagues. Honored to be here, of course. As you can see on the stage, working in the construction sector under the CPR, we were young in 2016, Oscar said, but as you can see, you lose your hair while being in the process. FIEC represents not only the big contractors, FIEC represents all of the contractors, and the contractors working both in buildings and in civil engineering. Gonzalo just said that some of the standards that they comprise more information than just the regulatory information that the European Commission expects from us. But this is normal, of course. If we go back in time, we made European standards without any influence of the European Commission. When the CPD came, then of course we added the Annex ZA, and the Annex ZA referred to the clauses that were relevant for CE marking. And even at that time, the European Commission said, yes, but products already placed legally onto the market have to be able to remain there with CE marking, so some of the thresholds will have to disappear. Over time, when we were working in the framework of the CPR as well, we saw that also the voluntary characteristics, as Gonzalo said, also disappeared. And certainly in the framework of the CPR, we have seen that our standards have changed completely using very specific CPR terminology. And this, of course, has consequences, because the standards that we are producing today are made almost tailor-made for the CPR, but that also makes them less useful for other purposes. Do not misunderstand me. CE marking is very important. The internal market is very important. The market for construction products is approximately 500 billion euros worth, so it's very important. And I think everyone in the room will support the idea of CE marking, free circulation of products. That is without question, of course. And CE marking allows you, manufacturers, to circulate their products in more than 30 countries, so very important for the internal market. But of course, the construction sector is not about selling and buying construction products. It's not like a television set, it's not like a mobile phone. We actually do something with these construction products. And the construction sector is worth 1,500 billion euros, so more important than the internal market for construction products as such. And also, we do not only work within Europe. European contractors, European actors in the construction sector, they work beyond the European Union as well. And so we have to make sure that what we produce in CEN is also going to be useful outside of just the internal market. When we talk about the CPR, we are talking about free circulation of construction products, and therefore the main intervening parties are the manufacturers on the one hand, the member states on the other hand, and of course the European Commission being there somewhere in the middle. If you look at my slide, I have tried to list all of the actors in the construction sector. As you can see, there are many different stakeholders that we have to make standards for. So if we just respond to the needs of the CPR, then we are only responding to a small part of the actors involved in the construction sector. They have different needs. But even if you go to the different countries, the different actors also have different needs, because we have a different regulatory system, we have different codes of practice, we have a different insurance systems, we have different expectations from consumers. So it's clear that if we want to respond to the needs of the construction sector, we need to do more than just the CPR. And reference was made to the digital era that we are now going to. It's going to be very important. Elena referred to it. It is here today, and we need to be ready for building information modeling tomorrow. And if we want to do that European Union-wide, then we have to make sure that our European product standard, that they comprise all the information that is going to be necessary to implement the digitized world of tomorrow. So that's not just only regulatory requirements, it's also aspects like color, dimensions, shape of a product. Everything that all of the stakeholders need will have to be digitized, and of course, preferably based on a European standard. Let's hope that we're not going to do that at the national level. And then, of course, internal market, like I said, is important, but our construction sector also works outside of the European Union. Also, Elena referred to it, our European standards are being used across the globe in many countries. But of course, if we make CPR-specific standards using the terminology, AVCP terminology, no one is going to be able to use that. Because AVCP, all the definitions, all the terminology that is surrounding AVCP, they are explained in our regulation, which only applies in the European Union. So outside of the Union, no one knows what AVCP is going to be. So we need to be careful, we need to make sure that we continue to make European standards that are going to be useful outside of the European Union. So if we want to ensure that the competitiveness of our sector is supported, we have to make sure that we have up-to-date product standards, that they go beyond the regulatory needs, satisfying all of the stakeholders. And so all the aspects that I just said are very important. They have to reflect the state of the art, of course, and in accordance with the definition of standards, they have to be built on the consolidated knowledge of science, technology, and ensure that they are useful for all of the community in our sector, for all of the stakeholders. And also, Elena refers to the principles of standardization. We have to make sure that what we do in our SENTECs, that these continue to respond to the principles of standardization. If they do not, we might get into trouble with our European standards. And so, of course, going back more than 20 years, we had good European standards where we added an Annex ZA. The intention was that the Annex ZA indicated which clauses are relevant for the CPD and now the CPR. But now this approach seems to be contested by the European Commission. The European Commission seems to prefer harmonized standards that only concentrate on the CPR. And we have to verify whether this is the case. And if that is so, then we have to see how we are going to also respond to the other needs that I referred to. And therefore, one of the things that we may have to consider is that we make a part one, which specifically refers to the CPR, responds 100% to the needs of the European Commission, as indicated by Oscar just now, and that in addition, we make a European product standard responding to all of the needs of the stakeholders, also having those voluntary characteristics. They are voluntary because they are necessary for all the other stakeholders, so voluntary is to be considered between brackets. So this is one of the possibilities. It's not optimal, but I think we have to ensure that we respond to the needs of all of the stakeholders. And of course, if we want to do that, then we are also going to need guidance to explain how to write such a part two. We're now in a situation where some of the SENTECs are stopping work because they see no progress of their standards. Everyone is getting demotivated. There is now even a SENTEC considering deharmonization of its standard, so we urgently need to do something. The guidance documents are essential, but we also need to have from the European Commission the assurance that if we produce harmonized standards completely in line with the needs of the European Commission, that they are actually going to cite those documents, and that in addition, we have the possibility to also add the information that the other stakeholders need. Digital world, we have a FIEC website which provides a lot of information showing that contractors are not just people standing with their boots in concrete, they're also active in the digital world, and I would like to thank you for your attention.
Thanks, Eric. I would invite you to